Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another week of the Enjoy the Walk podcast. This is your host, Dalton, with my co-host and best man on the left, right, or in the middle side, whichever way you guys are viewing, Dante. We have an exciting week ahead. It is Live Golf Week officially. We start the draft process as we're recording this show. So we will get into who the teams are, who the team captains are, how to watch, and the buzz around the love and still the hate. Obviously, we've got the haters out there in full force for the Live Golf. We've got Dante talking his match play round and a miraculous story surrounding that match. I cannot wait to get into that one. We'll talk Sky Caddy. We'll talk U.S. Open local and sectional qualifying wrapping up this week and some of the big names that got in, some of the big names that didn't quite make the cut. The golf's longest day, Dante, maybe can be considered your match play round, but obviously those guys out there for 36 holes making it happen. Some playoffs going well into dusk and almost into the nighttime. So guys, thank you for joining us. As always, you can go to www.enjoythewalkpod.com to check out the latest from us, the latest merch drops, the latest blog posts, and the latest episodes and interviews exclusively here at Enjoy the Walk podcast. So Dante, let's get into it, man. Let's talk shop. You had a hell of a match on your hands out at the Running Deer match play event.
Yeah, dude, it was, it's almost getting close to a week out and I'm just still absolutely baffled at the outcome for it. It was just absolutely wild. So Running Deer decided, we got a new head pro, an assistant GM, and he decided to introduce what is now called the Deer Cup, and it's throughout the summer. They wanted X amount of guys to basically qualify. We had 32 guys qualify, so we basically match play throughout the summer, bracketed off based on, it was full handicap 100%. So you had to go out, play a qualifier round. If you got in based on that qualifying round, you were then seeded. Of course, I had the best qualifying round and round to date, and which put me up in the one seed bracket. So I was playing the 16 seed. Knew the guy, really great guy. Hell of a dude. It was a hell of a round. But I haven't, like, he's always played in my group, but I've never been paired with him, so I've never really seen him play. But we have a mutual friend that played with us, so I was kind of trying to text him here and there leading up to the first round of match play. And trying to get, like, how is he as a player, this and that. And, of course, they're like, oh, yeah, well, he's playing really good because he's playing off of a 10, and I was a 5. So with that being said, I gave him 5 strokes, and I basically played straight up. But I know we discussed before how, to me, like, I understand, but at the same time, it's like, wait a second, he may be a 10, and I'm a 5, but I have to give him 5 strokes, but he's still getting 5 strokes on the hardest holes. And if I'm a 5 handicap, I still need help on the 5 hardest holes. I said, it's going to be a test. And I was excited for it. Now, I'll tell you what, it wasn't the...
I've had some clarification on that kind of mess or conundrum we find ourselves in, right? So
yeah.
Basically, the way I understand it is, if he's a 10 on the 5 hardest handicap holes that you would get strokes on, he's also getting strokes.
Yeah, so it's almost as if he's...
It really would kind of negate itself sometimes. You know, at the end of the day, it's a very muddy water conversation because say he makes a par for a 3, but you also made a 3 for a 2, right? If you still got a stroke on that hole too, then you win the hole. So, you know what I'm saying though? If you did get a stroke... So it's tough to you know, wash out in the weeds. I love the conversation of what ifs, but tell me this. And I love this for the listeners. Dante was texting me live updates through the whole match. I felt like I was like on a Twitter feed, or like when you can't have coverage, but you're watching a guy hit the fairway and you see the tracker in the fairway, then you see the tracker on the green. And, you know, like I was watching the Ryder Cup and I had live text updates of Dante's personal Ryder Cup match.
The funny thing is everybody was telling me, and especially our buddy Eddie G, because I was playing this, he goes by the name Charlie. So he goes, yeah, Charlie's playing really well lately. I said, great. I said, of course that would happen. You know, of course, like when you get in these competitions and there's 10 to 15 handicaps, if they have a really good day, they they blow everybody out of the water. And I said, great. And I was like getting, you know, back and forth, just jawing with some of my other friends. They're like, yeah, you're going to get smoked. It's going to be the Tiger 8-6. I said, screw that. I'm going to get blown out and go 10-8. Like straight up, first 10 holes, I'm done. And I almost jinxed myself in that scenario.
You did, because you told me starting out in the round, your partner went net birdie, birdie, 1-2. How did that go down?
He went birdie, net birdie. But so the first hole, I hit a good drive. I said, all right, we're good. Because that always kind of dictates how my mental state is when I hit a drive off the first hole, right? You always want to hit like a good – there's two things that I look for or I make sure – like the whole round can be an absolute mess, but there's two things I want to make sure when I'm out there playing around is I have a great drive off one and I finish 18 with a par or better. Just so you know you're coming back, right?
100%.
Anything else in between is it is what it is, right? Can't change that. But those two things are kind of my goals, like my little goals when playing. So we both hit our drive. He pushes one to right, but he thought he hit it out of bounds, but he was nowhere near it. But anyway, I hit mine right down the middle. We're relatively at the same yardage in. He hits first. It hits off the green's front left. It goes right over the front greenside bunker, which you can picture. Hits the hill and shoots left right towards the hole. Like, oh, wow. Like, good shot. Probably has about like 15, 20 feet for birdie.
A little kick from the gods.
I hit mine and hit in pretty much the same exact thing, but I was like, come on, get a good kick. Mine went pretty much the same direction, and now I was maybe about a yard behind him, so I went first. So it's like, all right, you know this putt, it's pretty flat, pretty slightly uphill, and then it probably breaks to the left a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tap and par. I said, all right, great. We parred the hole. He doesn't get a stroke, probably par the hole we'll keep going. You know, he drills it for birdie. And I said, okay, this is the day we're going to have. And I'm like, all right. So we get to the second hole, and like if he can get after the ball if he steps on it, if he puts a good swing on the driver. I mean, he was pounding. So he pounded the second, you know, we get the two. He hits a good one, and, like, it hits the hill and then just, like, kicks because it's, like, hard pan and just keeps going. So, you know, the second hole is a lengthy par four, right? And it's kind of like the rough. The fairway is just straight up the middle, and then all the rough kind of, it's just hills all the way, and it funnels back to the fairway.
And
so
I'll pause you there for a second. For the folks that have not played Running Deer before, head over to our YouTube page, Enjoy the Walk Golf Podcast. We're including flyovers of this hole up on the top right-hand corner so you can visualize what Dante's talking about when he's describing this round, because I think that's half the battle for our listeners on just the audio side of things. So guys, head over to our YouTube page to check out these flyovers of these holes as Dante's describing Running Deer.
Yeah, so it gets this kick, and then, you know, I didn't hit the greatest, but I was in the fairway. I said, all right, so, and I'm far back. I think I ripped a 4 or 5 iron. But I was like, ball was above my feet, and you know how it all slopes back down to the fairway. So you can get some, like, almost baseball swing. And I hit it dead straight, and the pin's back left. Well, I hit it to the right side of the green. And for the viewers and listeners as well, Running Deer's greens are huge. You basically have to break them down in the quadrants and play them as that based on where the flag is. You can't just go middle of the green, because 3-putt is often at Running Deer if you put yourself in the wrong spot on the green. Of course, that's what I did. I had to putt it basically. Actually, I had to chip it over this mound onto a green and barely trying to get it stopped. He somehow, his second shot, his ball got stuck in this nasty Running Deer lie. There's a clump of grass behind it. He came down steep on it, came an absolute liner rocket, and it puts him on the back edge, probably about just on the fringe, probably about 15, 20 feet, right? He ends up making par. He gets a pop there because it's the second or third hardest hole. So he makes par for net birdie. I make bogey. So right out the gate, the guy beat me straight up on the first two holes.
So not even forward, like, right, you text me, yeah. You say down through six, I'm thinking, uh-oh, like,
yeah,
we're in he, panic mode. And then you text me down 3 after 9. So you get through six, you're down 6. What's the mentality going through the next three holes to battle back and win three in a row?
Yeah, so he actually beat me straight up through the first six holes, which that I wasn't playing the greatest, and he was playing really well. He actually shot his handicap at the end of the day, which, you know, that's a great day. So, like I said, I'm down six through six. And I said, wow, this 10 and 8's probably going to happen. If I don't,
Stephen Ames' action is realistic.
I said, oh my God, I was just making fun of myself and my buddies, and this might actually become a reality. And at this point, I'm nervous, I'm worried, and I'm pissed. And I said, I need to figure something out. So we get to seven, and I stick one. Bird. Win. I was like, all right, it's not over yet.
There's life, baby.
We made it to the 11th hole.
It's like Grand Theft Auto. You're flashing red, like you're almost dead, but you ain't quite there yet. And then you get a little care package.
Yeah. And then the next two holes to get to nine, it's I go par, par, and he goes bogey, bogey. No strokes. So I win. I'm like, whoa, let's go. All right, I got it down to three. That not the greatest, but it beats being down by six.
Sure does.
I get to 10. Birdie. Beat him. I'm down by two. I said, let's go. We got this. Get to 11, I blow up on the hole because I put it in the drink. He wins. Now I'm back down by three. I'm like, damn. I'm like, all right. And this was, I texted you that too because I was just taking like timid, you know, scared, you know, trying to work it and force it type shots, right? Steering the ball. And you're like, dude, just swing and like let it fly.
That's it. So that was the last text I got. I got down three after 11 because of timid swings. I said, trust the hell out of it. Aim small, miss small. And then you go on this like silent binge for like an hour and a half. And I'm like, either Dante's on suicide watch and I need to check the eBay account, or some good things are happening. And he's still on course. And then I get this text message, all square going into 18. And I'm like, a miracle. It's the miracle at the deer. It's absolutely phenomenal. What happened? You, on 15, 16, and 17 to get you all square coming up to the 18th tee.
Yeah, so like before that, we stand on 13 and it's a par three. And I look, I said, I have to do something these next two holes or it's over. Because I was looking at it, I said, yo, if he does any damage of winning on these next two holes, I'm toast. So I beat him on the par three and then we have the par five, 14.
Which is huge.
And then which is huge. I said, all right, I'm in this. Yo, we get the 15, 16, and 17. I birdie all three of them.
And is there any interaction between this guy during those holes too? Is there like a shell shock moment? Did it get silent as he realized he just blew a six stroke or a six up lead? Or like, what's the chemistry between you two at that moment?
It wasn't like too much banter. I was walking and he was riding with our other buddy. Because our other buddy, Eddie G, was playing his match again, this guy named Matt, which was a great guy. Met him for the first time, played with him, new member, got him hooked up with our big game and group and all that. So he's kind of pumped because he's like, yeah, I really don't play with anybody. So I kind of just like put my head down and kind of just stayed away from everybody and was just so focused. But it wasn't, in 15. Nice birdie. Like when someone birdies the hole, like you can't be pissed, right?
No.
Either way. 16, dude, I almost aced it. I was tap in range. You know, gimme birdie. I think he missed, so he just like tried to force something and
because at that you know, point ended up he had to.
Yeah. Yeah, because he missed the green and he's just like, oh crap. So I got it back there. And then it wasn't really, I think, kind of to answer your question, it was 17 when it was kind of more the shell shock moment because we kind of were in the same areas. We hit like decent drives, but we weren't in great landing spots. Just second shots, we hit layups, and then it was kind of more the wedge game. I think what did he do? I think he hit his short, and because the pin was on the back left top tier shelf, And I think his rolled back into like the bowl area, or he had the chip on. I can't really quite remember. I pitched mine right. So I had this big mound kind of in front of me that I had to go over. And it was probably about 35 feet. The way it was, I had to putt almost not even looking at the hole, because I had to play this loop. And the guy before me was behind me, one of the other playing partners. He hits his putt, so I watch his. And I'm like, I know how this goes. You have to hit it more close to the fringe, because it's going to break hard, but it's going to go, it's going to straighten out. So I said, I have to hit it on the right angle up the hill that takes the right break. So I kind of like walked up over to my putt, you know, as I was lining it up, and I said, all right, I got to hit it here because it'll straighten out. Dude, I nailed it right in the hole. And that's where his moment of, oh crap, sinked in. And he goes, wow. And I said, holy smokes, I can't believe I just made that. He goes, and I said, dude, it is literally all square. And he kind of just was like, yeah, I know.
I'll be like, thanks, asshole, I know.
Yeah, yeah. So we get to 18. I said, wow, all square. All right, man, this is it. He goes, yeah. And he stroked 17 and 18. So luckily I birdied, and he bogeyed, I think. So, you know, I won the hole.
Just outright won it.
We get the 18, ripped it dead center right at the 150 stick. It's like, let's go. Dude, he pipes his, and he now 18's hole run is like a slight dogleg right, and it goes pretty much uphill. It's a really hard finishing hole. 14's parallel with it. Dude, he piped his drive. I've never, and that thing was a bullet, but he hooked it into the trees, but it somehow made it through all the trees and landed in the 14's fairway.
I know. And I'm like, texted me, this is a point I got another text, and he goes, 18 is a four, and he possibly just lost his first and OB on his provisional. And I'm thinking,
yes,
sealed the deal, right? Like, just yeah, no question about it, sealed the deal.
Because he hooked it in there, so obviously it's a lot of tree line into you can easily lose the ball. So he goes, I'm gonna take a provisional just in case. Well, OB right, he basically blocked it right and went OB right, and that's when I texted you. Yeah, you're right. Well, he's like, crap. So he went to go try and find the first one, which he did, which was actually on 14 fairway, and he kind of stood there for a good few minutes trying to figure out what to do. He was contemplating of actually playing it up 14, but he had to hit it high and over the trees in order to get it on the green. Well, he decided to take his medicine, popped it back out into the fairway. I hit, and I'm like in between clubs. I take the longer club, and I, of course, I take a timid swing, and I hit it short of the – pin high, but missed the greens, and now I'm sitting in rough, but I have nothing really to play with because the pin's probably about 10 feet away from me. He ends up, you know, playing it up, hits it short, then hits it long. Yeah, he was putting for six when I was, so I chipped mine, right? And I stubbed it, and it landed on the fringe. I'm like, oh crap. So now I got probably about a 9-foot putt.
So you opened the window a little bit.
Oh, I was like, oh my God. I looked at him. I said, dude, this is literally going down to the wire. And he just started laughing. And then I hit my putt. And again, like, I hit it through the fringe, which was pretty hairy. Mm-hmm. And I basically stubbed that. I said, you got to be kidding me. So I marked. I had it probably about a 5-footer. And he goes to putt his. And I said, what are you putting for? And he goes, putting for six. I'm like, oh my God. Well, he missed that, tapped in 7-4-6. Oh. I said, crap. I said, if I miss this, we're tied.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I just kind of, the nerves really weren't there, but like physically, mentally, right. Yes. And I just drained the 5-footer putt for bogey, and I won. Dude, he just kind of like took off his hat, shook my hand, and goes, dude, that was insane. So I can't believe that just happened.
I mean, and that's what you got to do. As someone who loses a lead like that, I mean, when you set out on a match, especially a club match where you know you're giving up strokes, you want a match to be that close. I know I can remember one I had maybe a year or two ago that went like 22 or 23 holes in a net match play. It's just fun, man. It gets the juices flowing. You text me after the round. You're like, dude, a match I'll never forget. I mean, especially, I know the guy that lost is never going to forget it either, because it's like an absolute knockout punch by Mike Tyson losing a 6-up lead. But, dude, that's fun. That's what the game's all about. You want to play all 18 holes in a match.
Yeah, and I was like, especially making it come down to the wire. I mean, if I was playing a little bit better, I probably wouldn't mind going the extra holes, man. Why not? Sure. There's nothing more than playing more golf. But plus, I didn't know how they were going to do tiebreakers anyway. I'd rather go to playoff extra holes rather than do like a what's the word for it? You know, match of cards, which yeah. I would have lost. But I'm glad I was able to get it done and win one up. I walked into the pro shop and like, so I said, well, I was down 6-6 and won one up. They're like, huh? Like, everybody was just absolutely baffled. And they're like, oh my God, like, that's insane. And it truly was. And, you know, shout out to Charlie, my opponent, man. I mean, he put up a dog fight. And granted, you know, it was literally back and forth. There was literally only one hole where we actually tied. Someone won each hole when we were playing. And it was just, we were just basically throwing punches, especially on the back nine, because that was kind of more back and forth. I mean, it was an absolute grind. And I don't know, I think it was after 13 where I really kind of just almost went like MJ Tiger-esque, where like back in the day in the 90s when someone said something bad about MJ or even in the 2000s with Kobe, they took it personally and took it to heart, and then ended up just having this like absolute comeback. And dude, I'll never forget the first round of the match and my round one of the first year I've ever played in a Deer Cup or match play style like that.
Sure.
Dude, I'm so pumped to make it, because I want to see how far I can make it. I actually want to win the whole thing. I mean, if you don't think you can win or want to win, then you shouldn't. I mean, probably shouldn't even want to play. But yeah, I want to be able to hold the cup at the end of the day. I mean, if it doesn't go my way, it doesn't go my way. It is what it is. But dude, I'll never forget this match play round. It was one for the ages, and I don't think I'll ever top that in my playing career. Just the sole fact of, you know, being down by 6-5 birdies on the entire round myself. I mean, I don't really make much birdies. I usually just keep it in play, make my par or bogey and keep it moving. But man, I'll tell you what, on to round two.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That match, you know, happened just a couple days before a lot of other professional and amateur players, probably most exciting day. If they have been there, even if they haven't been there, or if they have played before. The sectional qualifying for the U.S. Open around the country went on yesterday, June 6th, in a lot of places. We had a lot of notable names in the hunt down the stretch. Ricky Fowler missing it by a couple strokes. You had guys like David Lingmerth and all kinds of tour pros right on the precipice of making it to the U.S. Open. A couple guys I want to talk about. Obviously, Colton Heisey carries the bag for Brandon Matthews. Colton's been on the show a bunch of times when he was caddying for Grayson Sigg, and when he was just, you know, kind of bouncing around in his early days, just getting his time started on the Korn Ferry and Latin America tour. Now he carries the bag for Brandon Matthews. Brandon Matthews punched his ticket in an 8-for-3 playoff, making a birdie on the second hole to go ahead and punch that ticket to Brookline. Super pumped for Brandon. Saw a lot of guys in our Scranton area who are good friends with Brandon, really giving him pumps, you know, congratulations. So excited to see him in the field. Other notables out in our Maryland area here, Denny McCarthy, past Maryland Open and Maryland AM champion, got it done. He played in a venue that was 13 spots. He ended up finishing seventh. So he got the job done. So be on the lookout for Maryland native Denny McCarthy. And then the Maryland tournament that happened up in Rockville, Maryland. We saw Grayson Murray, who is notorious lately for giving Kevin Na all kinds of BS on Twitter and Instagram for playing slow. And I can't wait till you leave. Good riddance. Grayson Murray made it through. And then Korn Ferry Tour Player of the Year last year, Joseph Bramlett, absolutely lit Rockville, Maryland on fire, shooting 8 under through two rounds, just going absolutely nuts, winning the U.S. Open qualifier. Stupid excited to see a lot of these guys get through. Other guys in this Maryland region that just didn't quite make it, but had their hands on it, at least throughout a part of the day, through the first round. Billy Hurley III, who is notorious for getting through that Rockville sectional, and guys like Kevin Chappell too, who kind of been on the background, a little bit of back burner in their career, gave it a run with shooting 3 or 4 under, but just not enough. So, dude, it was a really cool day to just kind of tune into the leaderboards and see where everybody was at throughout the day.
Yeah, and that's like, you're going off talking about pretty much all these players and kind of seeing the cool thing is more of the support coming from, you know, the locals, local friends of friends, and even like the local, like Brandon Matthews affiliated with, you know, Gap Golf Association of Philadelphia, them kind of, you know, patting him on the back, posting about him saying, hey, hell of a job. Awesome. Way to go. You know, we got Gap in the U.S. Open kind of thing. And more of this, like more of the support that goes along with it. But a lot of the things, this kind of reminds me, and that's why I think it's really cool when it comes to about this and yesterday, is it reminds me of the greatest game ever played, or even when, you know, back in the Bobby Jones, like the Bobby Jones movie, where, you know, it's all kind of like word of mouth and people are talking and it's almost whispered down the lane and, you know, this person just did this and this person just did that. And, yeah, you know, you're sending screenshots to your buddies and you're seeing all these pros and seeing where they're at, trying to follow them. I think that's on a viewer's standpoint, because it's not, you know, it's happening throughout the entire country, right? All these sectionals going on.
For sure.
It's not something that they're going to broadcast live and you're watching these guys, unless like someone's there streaming it from their phone or whatnot. It's more of you're just seeing leaderboards get passed around and you're like, wow, like look at these guys, like look at these names, and you're circling like all these big names. And I think that's like one of the coolest things about it.
For sure. I mean, you look at this one sectional out in Roswell, Georgia, 7 and 6 under. Made it. There was a playoff at 6 under. Matt McCartney beat Patton Kizzire, who is a seasoned PGA Tour vet, in a playoff to punch his ticket. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that is just so crazy cool about this U.S. Open. And we'll talk about an announcement that the USGA made a little bit after we go through the rest of these names, but it's what makes this U.S. Open so special to our country and to the game of golf overall. It is truly an open. If you're good enough by statistics and you have the numbers that get your handicap in the right spot to be able to qualify you to play, you can sign up and play. And you play in sectionals, if you get there, with PGA Tour pros who don't quite have the official world golf ranking, but are out there week in and week out, and you have a chance to beat them and go play in the U.S. Open. I think that's just the coolest fact.
And that's the crazy thing, because I think like one of our old pros, he's retired, I think he said it. We were kind of just, you know, shooting the shit in the clubhouse, and he said, yeah, you know, if you have the skills, yeah, go ahead and play in it. Like locals, you know, you can, if you are playing well that day, it's fairly easy to get in the sectionals. And he goes, when you show up the sectionals, next thing you see half the people are former or PGA Tour players or former pros, and you're just, oh crap. It's just crazy how much of a jump it goes when you go from locals to sectionals and you just see all these players. I mean, like we're just talking about it right now. I mean, you're just naming off a handful of guys. And when even, I mean, -6, -7 under, it's just mind blowing how good it is, but how awesome it is that it's not just a, hey, you're invited to this tournament. It's no, you have to earn a spot.
Well, and recent, let's go back to this Purchase New York, qualifier where Brandon Matthews qualified and won in his playoff. Chris Goddard, who was the player of the year in the collegiate level last year, turned pro. He won the event at 3 under. Brandon Matthews was 1 stroke behind. Let me read the names off that he played with and or beat in the playoff. Ricky Barnes, old tour pro. Johnson Wagner, current tour pro. Jamie Lovemark, current tour pro. Hao Tong Lee, world golf championship winner, like 3 years ago. I mean, this is some of the names that are showing up to a Century Country Club in Purchase, New York, and trying to get their way into the U.S. Open. It's really, really sweet to see. Michael Thor Bjornsson, I'm going to butcher that name, but I know I've seen him on the DP World Tour and in a European Tour events. I know he's a big name as well over across the pond. And again, you know, got into that playoff and ended up getting into the U.S. Open with Brandon Matthews. So you hit the nail on the head there. It's like you take such a big step when you get into these sectional qualifiers. I'm going to name off some more guys that missed the cut down in this Columbus, Ohio sectional qualifier. Cameron Champ, Jason Duffner, Doug Gim, Lucas Glover, Nick Watney, Hudson Swafford, and Brandon Steele. They all missed the cut. Guys like Lanto Griffin shot 12 under. Mind you, 6 under was the cut on that sectional.
Jeez.
I mean, absolutely absurd. 108 players in that sectional for 13 spots. Just an absurd amount of spots in that, while other other sectionals like that Purchase New York was only 5 spots. So always interesting to see what the field size gets to and how many players they take from each sectional and how it differs.
But that's another like kind of deciding factor as a player, right? We can kind of downsize it to say like a gap event, right? The gap mid-am, they usually have 4 qualifiers. Well, you can sign up for a qualifier and like you can pick which one, right? And it's 4 separate courses, but depending on player sign up is how they determine how many guys they're taking. So it's crazy. Like, all right, like I'm gonna go play this course that I know, but if there's only like 10 guys playing it and they're taking one, mm-hmm. your chances, rather than you playing in another course you may not know, and there's 100 guys that sign up and they're like, oh no, we'll take 10 to 20. It's crazy how that plays a huge factor into it as well.
Well, and again, I mean, right across like the highway in Springfield, Ohio, guys like Bo Hostler, big Bo Hostler, who is finally kind of getting back onto the scene after losing his card, qualified. While guys like Scott Piercy, Brant Snedeker, Sahith Theegala, and NFL star Danny Woodhead failed to qualify there.
He missed it.
He missed the cut just by a couple strokes, though. Nothing crazy. But it's nuts to just pass through this list on golf.com and just see what the strength of the fields here are when you get to sectional qualifying. It's really absurd, but absurd in a good way, to see how much talent is there at the sectional level, combined with half the field mostly being amateurs, which I think is just so sweet to see. Amateurs 50 plus and amateurs in high school to the college level. There's such a good, massive representation of age range in these sectional qualifiers too.
Yeah. And that, again, that's like one of the greatest things about golf. I mean, anybody can go out and play. And if you have the ability to compete, it really doesn't matter like kind of like your age level anymore.
Right. So we'll see everyone that we just mentioned out at the U.S. Open at the Country Club in Brookline, Massachusetts, Thursday, June 16th. Everybody will tee it up. The big, I want to say elephant in the room, but until this afternoon, the big question was, you know, what is the USGA going to say about the guys that left for the LIV Golf tournament, right? Especially the guys like Dustin Johnson, Sergio Garcia, Louis Oosthuizen, who said, I'm actually revoking my membership to the PGA Tour. I am no longer going to even show up at the PGA Tour event. Now, Phil Mickelson is still playing that muddy water, even though he committed to the first LIV Golf event and is in London right now. He is not revoking his membership. In an interview with Bob Herrig, he goes on to say, I have a lifetime membership because of my amount of wins, and I hope to keep that. So interesting to see what the situation goes on with Phil now that he's kind of back putting tees into the ground. but the USGA came out and stated that, you know, they aren't an indicator of what events these guys get to play, which I think overall is why these guys are choosing to go somewhere else, because the PGA Tour as an entity is kind of giving them such restrictive access to other events around the world. We'll get into that a little later, but yeah, the USGA made a statement today saying, you know, come one, come all, if you qualified, who are we to tell you not to come? So excited to see, there'll be a full field. Dustin Johnson will be in the field. Phil Mickelson will be in the field. It is going to be a media day circus with all the guys from LIV that qualified inside the ropes at a U.S. Open?
Yeah, I mean, right there, you just said it. It's an open. You can't have an open tournament if you limit who can actually play.
Earlier today, a U.S. Open that hasn't opened. No news here. See you at Brookline.
Exactly. If you can qualify to play, you're in. And they basically said that. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory and it's straightforward. So, the media is going to be buzzing that, or that they're going to be there. You know, obviously they're going to be asking all types of these crazy questions. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of drama on the media side of things. But hey, if it's an open and I can play, guess what? They're going to go play. It's a major championship. You think Phil's going to miss that on the one that he's been trying to get for his entire career? Absolutely not.
No chance. And I'll be interested to see as well who exactly, what Phil shows up, not only at this LIV golf event, but at the U.S. Open. He took 4 months off. He said he's revitalized. He said he's got all this weight off his chest finally, you know, just of making the decisions and a lot of the antics that came to light he worked on with himself personally. He said he's been to therapy with his wife, just with himself personally. It seems like, and I'm really intrigued to see it because he's not that far removed from winning a PGA championship 13 months ago. I'm excited to see a new, maybe fresh step in Phil Mickelson inside the ropes. And maybe, you know, everyone talks about golf being a mental game. If he has completely freed up his mind on the mental side of things, he could be dangerous for a few more years to come. So I'll be excited to see what kind of golf he's playing, not only this week at the LIV golf event in London at Centurion Club, but also out at Brookline at the U.S. Open in 2 weeks. So it'll be fun to see him. It'll be fun to see who all tees it up, that we just talked about from getting in through sectional qualifying. See if one of those guys can make a deep run. I think that's, the dream is to go through the local sectional and then make a run deep into the U.S. Open. So a lot of names to look forward to, guys. If you want to stay up to date with our coverage of not only the LIV golf event coming up this weekend, but the U.S. Open and golf news overall, go to @enjoythewalkpod on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, and Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And go to our YouTube page where we post every podcast to YouTube with video descriptions of whatever we're talking about as we talk about them live to our YouTube page every week. So guys, that's Enjoy the Walk Golf Podcast on YouTube. And be on the lookout for some exciting work with Sky Caddy and Edison Wedges, as we're doing some sweet gigs with them, covering their new LX5 watch at Sky Caddy and detailing the innovative new heads at Edison Wedges. So, Dante, we've got to get into it because it's finally here. The draft is upon us. It has happened right before we started recording this podcast on Tuesday evening. LIV Golf is launched. They are all systems go, it seems like. The stands are up. The media is there. The draft has happened. The captains are picked. The logos are out for the teams. We'll talk about team name selection in a minute. I think they could have gone a little better, but it's almost here. We're seeing the functionality of what has just been pen on paper, typing on paper, actually come to fruition this week, and we're learning a lot along the way.
Yeah, I mean, the T-peg still hasn't been, stuck in the ground. So I'm still going by. No. I'm still sticking by that. But no, it seems like they've got a pretty dope setup over there. I think the logo's kind of cool, to be honest. It seems more new age.
I told you this, and I think if they do it right, and we'll get into it, it looks very esports. It looks very, as you said, modern. It looks like someone in the 21st century designed it and modeled the entire complexity that is LIV Golf around the idea of being streamed online and for the 21st century user.
I agree. And honestly, I mean, we can probably get into that now or just a little few is the modern streaming aspect. And that's one of the biggest things. You know, we talked off the air regarding, we shouldn't be fighting necessarily. The league's happening, so put that behind you. Stop talking about the political side of it, where the money's coming from. It is what it is at this point. We should be kind of arguing at the fact of the way broadcasting is. Like, all right, yeah, these players are getting paid out. They're getting these dope, possibly, like, contracts and deals that you really kind of see more on a team sports base rather than, you know, golf per se. Let's really kind of talk about the PGA Tour side of their broadcasting compared with the it looks like the LIV's going to do. And I think we've been talking about this since we've started of how poorly golf broadcasting has been across the board. And it seems like we're finally moving into the new age to get a better viewership for the fans experience. Everything's being generated towards the player. Like, what about the fans? How can we experience this and have a better experience viewing golf that we've always been complaining about?
Yeah. And I think they're starting in a great direction, right? Obviously everyone knows this isn't going to be like an NBC or CBS coverage, which off the jump, I'm happy about. We've been begging for something new, something better. And I think I don't think it's the PGA Tour's fault. I think the change that our NBC and CBS and kind of the stoic backgrounds that those two entities have hold back the PGA Tour a little bit because they're constantly fighting TV rights and they're constantly in this catch 22 of the TV rights and the contracts and this, that, and the other, the ESPNs, whatever. And I think that's been so stoic for so long that that's just the way they're stuck in. And if this is the way, because we've seen esports succeed at like a level we've never seen before, and I'm going to keep going.
Esports has grown so fast.
I've got a statistic for you here, Dante, and for the listeners as well. Esports in 2018, now granted, this was many years ago, but in 2018, esports saw upwards of 27 million viewers in 1 year alone. Now, granted, that's a lot of entities. It's a lot of different esports, right? But that's online streaming only. You're not tuning into Fox for esports. You're not tuning into CBS or NBC for esports. That is online streaming. That is Twitch. That is YouTube. That is Facebook Live. It is whatever, right? And those platforms are the way LIV is going to try and broadcast their first few events. And I'm interested to see how it catches traction because I think if you look at it from a broader spectrum, the Indian market, the Chinese market, you could go on down the line, Australia, New Zealand, South America, whatever, struggles to watch PGA Tour events because of the kind of limited coverage around TV schedules. Now, all you need is to go to livegolf.com and click watch. It's that simple. It's not having a Peacock service. It's not subscribing to PGA Tour Live and going through hoops and ladders and jumps and whatever and slides. It's simply going to a website and click and watch. And I think that right off the bat is going to allow a worldwide audience who wants to watch their prospective player play such an easier access to watch this event. And I think that's where Americans are missing is the fact that this isn't just for us and our precious little egos in the United States of America. This is for a worldwide game. And I think right there off the bat is a huge leverage that LIV Golf is going to have on the worldwide audience.
Yeah, and then I think that's what he's been pushing ever since, is it's, like you said, it's not in this American bubble, right? It's for the world to see. It's for the, you know, the players to compete against the world. It's kind of almost like your true World Cup or world kind of golf organization, right? And you're right. I mean, how many times do you try and tune into any of the DP stuff or, you know, all the Euro tournaments? I mean, you really can't unless you accidentally wake up at 3-4 in the morning on a Saturday and next thing you know, your TV's still on and golf's being played overseas. I mean, that's actually from experience, but I do that quite often. But, you know, that's when I can tune into it. Other than that, I have no idea what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you look at to just the at the event opportunities, right? It's 11 a.m. gates open. It's a shotgun start. You know,
I don't know how I feel about that, to be honest.
That's the one part I'm skeptical about, but
I don't like it.
It's a field of 48 players. And I think if you look at it from a broad spectrum, it's going to be four guys versus four guys, or it might be eightsomes. I'm not 100% sure how they're teeing off just yet. But if you look at it from a team perspective, if they're doing it the way I'm thinking they're doing it, they're going to have maybe two guys versus two guys in a foursome, maybe four and four and have an eightsome. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to go. We don't really know the specifics until I think they put a tee in the ground, which is going to be interesting. But they've got a fan village, which is going to have like garden style food and drinks during the entire tournament, which I think is kind of similar to the way PGA Tour sets up some of their villages where you can go and get refreshments and food and whatnot.
That's one thing, you know, I'll, you know, tip my cap to the way the PGA Tour is doing things for their events. They do make it a physical experience. Mm-hmm. You know, you go there, it's not just, you know, you're walking up and down the course watching players, you know, hit their shots on each hole. I mean, there's all these little kind of beer gardens and little venues, like you said, you can go to, and it's a big giant hangout. But, you know, not a lot of us are fortunate to be able to say, I'm going to take this day off, or I'm going to take day, purchase this ticket and go there. And then we kind of go back to like, how are they going to do it? So it's, you're right. It's going to be interesting to see.
No, it definitely will. And I think, you know, when we talked about it too, we were like, all right, well, who's going to broadcast? What is the overall look and vibe of this broadcast online going to look right? And we've got a little, you know, hint or two at what it's going to look like. Obviously, we talked about the event itself is going to be broadcast on live feeds from Live Golf, as well as YouTube and Facebook Live. According to Live Golf, they're going to have 60 on-course microphones, including ones worn by not only the players but the caddies, and over 50 cameras capturing the action throughout the event. So I think if you're looking at it right, you're talking 2 to 3 cameras per hole is really what it's looking like if you break it down. But tons of action. Guys on all 18 holes at every aspect of the day. And I think when you talk about fast-paced golf events, instead of, you know, you're one player on this hole and two players on that hole at a time, when you're talking fast-paced events, you need an announcer that's going to do that. And they picked up a Premier League soccer announcer as their main play-by-play, you could call it, announcer, which I think is really interesting. And we're going to have to see how Live Golf maybe tries to change the vibe of coverage as well. I think if they're going with a Premier League announcer who has done soccer in the past, they're trying to do it a little different. So I'm interested to see too how the vibe of golf gets called as well, instead of your kind of very, I don't want to say platonic because that's not the word, but very stoic and still announcers in your Jim Nance, your Nick Faldos, your guys that have been there and sit in the same chair for 72 holes kind of style event.
Yeah, it's going to be weird too if you're all finishing on the same at the same time, but your 18th hole is a different hole. You know, it's not like you're the clock's winding down in a basketball game and they're on the same court and they got everybody's watching the same game, and next thing you know, Steph Curry hits like a buzzer beater jumper and everybody's watching that. How's that going to play when, you know, two guys are tied or two teams are tied for the lead? And the one guy's finishing on a par three at 150 yards, and the other guy has 270 out into a par five.
For sure. It's
that will be interesting.
But it could be interesting too, right? Because then I'm not waiting for 4.5, 5 hours to know if so-and-so is also going to catch up to the lead or not, right? Dustin Johnson put a good perspective in his first media interview with the Live. They had their media day today, and Dustin Johnson made a good point, right? You're not going to get a bad draw as a player out of this. You're not going to play in horrible windy conditions when the guys in the morning wave got pristine sun and 75 degrees. Everyone's going to play in the same environment. So I think from a player's perspective too, it's going to provide a very, very fair set of tournament conditions because everybody is going to be out there for the same 4.5-5 hours.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. But I think, play devil's advocate, the things that may change is, you know, you're a little cold at the start. What if you're starting on a par three, right? And you sting one, you know, and you get yourself kind of in a jam. Usually, I mean, I don't know about you. Sometimes it takes a little bit to get going. I'd rather have like a par four or par five. They get a little extra swings under my belt before I'm, you know got the flat stick in hand.
You know, as well as I do, when you're playing in that like charity event or that scramble and you get stuck on like a 210-yard par three to start your day at 7:45 in the morning.
Sounds familiar, don't it?
Oh, it does. It sucks. It absolutely Remember? Sucks.
Philmont?
Philmont, man. What are you doing, Barstool? Come on.
That sucks. That did suck. So
it brings the question into play for sure is, are these guys going to be a little salty if they're starting on a hole they're not too favorable of?
Exactly. And I think that's like – I mean, yeah, DJ does have a good point where everybody's playing the same elements for the next 4 or 5 hours. And like you said, you know, if you're going to win at the end when you finish your, you know, last putt on your 18th hole, mm-hmm. rather than having to wait, like, I mean, you could finish and the leader hasn't even teed off yet.
For sure. It'll be interesting to watch. There's no doubt about that.
I thought,
you know, and a topic we've got to get into is, so we're talking about the scramble play. We're talking about teams, right? It's the first true, like, big team event we've seen in golf with this many teams in it, right? When you talk about, you know, the Ryder Cup, it's really just A versus B. This is, and I'll count them out for you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. This is 12 teams strong with four guys each. I mean, how do you think that could possibly play into interesting opportunities for viewership or maybe confusing opportunities for viewers?
Well, my first question is question and kind of, I totally forgot that they were doing teams. So how's it play out? So they're playing individually, right? But there's also a team event going on.
Yep. So there's going to be, obviously, like we said, 12 teams, 48 players, 54 holes, no cuts. They are playing their own ball, right? Like, it's not like a scramble. Like, it was rumored to be like, oh, play the best ball and like go insanely low. Although I would love to see a professional scramble at some point just to see how absurdly low these guys could go. I think it would be
like a four-man scramble, not a two-man. Because they've done two-mans before.
No, like the scrambles every day, guys. Like
every charity outing that you see.
Yeah. Okay.
That'd be interesting.
At one point. But that's not how they play. They are playing their own balls because there is individual accolades and individual purses to be had for each individual at the end of the season as well as midway through the season. But it's only available for players who play a minimum of four events. So some things to look forward there individually as well, but there is the team format. So it basically is just going to be, I think, a four-man better ball. Take the two best scores is what I'm assuming. Looking at this event, it says for the individual event, each stroke counts just like it always has. The individual winner will be the player with the lowest 54-hole accumulation. The team event is where it gets more exciting. Over the first two rounds, the best two stroke scores will count for each team. For the third and final round, the best three scores will count, with the lowest overall team scoring 54 holes will be named the team winner. So for the first 2 days, you get to throw out two scores. And then for the last day, again, 54 holes, not 4 days, three-day event. For the last day, you only get to throw out one. You got to be a little sharper on the last day. But we're basically playing a two-man better ball out of a four-man team. You know, this is like if you go to your club, you play with your foursome.
Yeah,
you have two throwaways.
Dude, this also sounds like the weekends at the Deer, dude. Because we have like upwards to 40 guys that play in the Saturday game. There's an overall individual $20 game, and then you can have your own games within your own foursome. And there's one gentleman that we always play with, and he's like a plus handicap. He'll flat out be like, I'll do a one-on-one, a two-on-one, a three-on-one. But he'll do like two two-on-ones, two, like, you know, say there's three guys, right? Mm-hmm. You got A, B, and C, and then he's D. He'll play A and B, A and C, and then like B and C. Like, he'll play like six different matches, dude. I'm just picturing that as you're describing how this Live and Golf tournament's going to play out. And it just seems like it's just a big old money match within your weekend buddies.
I kind of, don't get me wrong, I kind of like it. If they just would have came up with better names and logos. I mean, some of these are classy. Like Dustin Johnson's Four Aces is a classy ass logo. It's like a very scripty A. It looks like it could be like the AAA version of like the Oakland A's. Like it looks very classy.
Looks like the Braves.
It does look like the Braves. You're spot on there. The High Flyers, Phil Mickelson's group, looks like it could be straight out of Japanese culture. Like it looks very like, I don't know, it looks Japan-esque in his H and F logo there. The next one, Punch Golf Club, just looks like Philmont Golf Club or Philly Cricket Club kind of scripty logo as I'm going through the list here. And some of these names too. Like we'll get into some of the ones that I think are just atrocious and need to be redesigned. Like Fireballs Golf Club is literally straight out of like Smash Golf logo. I don't know.
No, you know what that looks like? That looks like the Major League movies logo.
Yes, it
does. You ever see Major League?
I have. Yes, it does. Sergio Garcia, come on, man. You need to do better than that with your logo. I know he didn't design it, but it looks just – it looks like the goofiest one out of all of them.
And they seem a little word art-esque and yes. As they kind of last minute did it rather than really thought it out.
Some of these look like very well designed and like very well put together. And then you've got Smash Golf Club, which looks like – and it's on Twitter trending already, like the fart logo. People are calling it the fart logo, which is just hilarious. I mean, some of these look absolutely trashy. I'll get and like some of the names just feel like Graham McDowell's Niblix Golf Club looks straight out of Ireland, and I love it.
I'm about to say that's my favorite one.
I agree.
Team name and everything. I think yep. Niblix. It's like clearly classy and traditional, and it's around the golf realms in my opinion.
You can tell Graham McDowell had a hand in like picking that one. And designing yeah. that one because it looks classy. It looks Irish with the font. And then you've got Taylor Gooch's Torque Golf Club, which just looks like Space Jam 4.0 in the logo. Not about it at all. But that's if you're looking at it from like a style standpoint, he's got Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swafford, and Andy Ogletree. If you're looking at it from like an American team, there's probably your most American team on the docket for this week is that team right there.
My question is, do the teams like change event after event and do this
each week? There is a draft held beforehand with new teams. Now, what I'm not sure of, and I think it might be the same, is because it's like they named it this week, like Sergio Garcia's Fireball Golf Club. I think each week Sergio is the captain for that team. So it'll be interesting for me to see too. Is it like, you know, when we were in high school, the same guys get picked every week, or are they going to be forced to pick different team members every week, or how's that going to work too? That's a big explanation point that I have is like, how's the week to week going to work? And is Sergio Garcia just going to pick James Piot every week? And is Graham McDowell going to pick the same guys every week? Or like, I hope that doesn't become the case, because if you look at Ian Poulter's first pick, Lee Westwood, that's a no-brainer. Those guys have played together for 30 years. Is he going to be able to pick Lee Westwood every week? I hope not, just for a viewer's perspective. So we'll have to see how that pans out too.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I kind of think they should just randomize it each time rather than have like the same team captain's pick. I think that would really twist things up and make it very strategic.
Like the NBA, yeah. It would be really interesting. I agree.
Now I wonder if the team names are gonna stay. If they don't go, like, all right, so you're saying you're thinking Sergio Garcia is going to be the team captain from however long. Like, what if they don't do that? Are we gonna have two different team names and logos?
Now I think the way I'm looking at it, these team names are here to stay.
So that's what to say, because
these are the 12 teams, like name ones.
I know, but if you switch it up each week, I mean that's like limited merch you can sell, and that's more merch you can sell. But it might be difficult logistically.
I think week in and week out. These are the 12 teams, and I think they're even looking at it one step further. These are the 12 captains, and I think the guys underneath them play prospectively each week. It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see how that all works out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, nonetheless, we're very close. They are very close to playing out at Centurion Golf Club, which looks like an absolute beautiful spot out there in London. I'm excited to see the golf course. I'm excited to see how exactly they cover it. I think it's just such an interesting time we find ourselves in as golf fans, of finally being, for the first time in our lifetime, and probably our parents' lifetime too, where we're offered a completely new version of professional golf, other than the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. Like, for the first time in our lifetime, we are offered a team event, a almost draft style 54 hole event to watch pros play. And it's not at a pro-am. It's not at a, It's not at like that team sixes event that the European Tour did, where it's women and men. It is a completely men's professional golf event like we've never seen before. So I'm interested to see how it goes. Skeptical, yes. Open-minded, absolutely.
Yeah. My biggest thing is I hope they put themselves on different golf courses, because I keep saying this over and over again, how the PGA Tour is kind of getting a little stale with their with their venues and events. It just seems like they're just packing them on flat, wide courses all the time.
Yep.
And from seeing kind of the highlights at this club, it looks like, you know, a London traditional golf club, kind of tucked in between the woods, really, you know, a lot of tree lines, and you kind of have to really strategically play your tee shots. Kind of almost brings back the traditional side of golf and away from that bomb and gouge mentality, which...
Well,
that's
this.
One of the things I really want to see.
Let's go over some of these golf courses, because I think you're hitting the nail on the head with they're starting to bring back some of the old style golf courses that the PGA didn't really play much, but the USGA used to use a lot in their US amateur and US mid am and US junior am. Pumpkin Ridge Golf Club, where Tiger Woods won one of his notorious US am titles, they're going there in Portland June 30th through July 2nd. Then they're coming to Trump National Golf Club Bedminster in New Jersey, which, if you remember, was the host of the PGA Championship until politics got in the way and they pulled out of Trump Bedminster. So now Trump picked up that one. Stay tuned, because Trump picked up another one out in October. Boston at the International, I really don't know too much about that golf club, other than from what I've seen. Just in an overview, it's a very old style tree line kind of perched up greens, which will be interesting to see these guys play. And then if you look out over the next few weeks, they go to Chicago and then Bangkok and then Jeddah, which I'm guessing is one of their kind of close to Dubai golf courses. It looks like it's out there on one of the islands. So that'll be interesting to see. Seems like a brand new golf course, very high money. So we'll have to see how that plays out. So that's located on the west coast of Saudi Arabia. And then we come back to Miami at Trump National Miami, which again will be a very interesting golf course to see, simply for the fact of we really haven't seen any big golf courses played down at Trump National Miami. Or I'm sorry, I take that back. That's Trump National Doral. We've seen a ton of golf courses. It's the PGA Tour specifically play at Doral. And the big monster that sticks out at the Doral. So that'll be very interesting to see. What I think is super interesting is the legendary Blue Monster being out there at Trump National Doral. Trump picked up two golf courses from a brand new organization that is highly, highly contested in media. I mean, it's very Trump-esque, and I'm not going to get political, but he picked up two golf events, two highly, highly notarized golf events from a tour that was stripping everything away from him, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how golf makes its way back to Trump golf courses as well through this LIV Golf, because when the PGA was making their exit from a lot of his events and a lot of his Trump courses in the past.
Yeah. One of the things is just switch it up, man. I just want to see different golf courses, and I want to see more traditional golf courses. Like I said, we see these big golf courses on the PGA Tour where, you know, the bombers are, you know, it's they're added tees where it's further away. And I've always said this, I said, you know, how do you control the distance, you know, from the guys who hit it completely, like super long? I said, put them closer to the trees. It's easy. The further you put them back over the further away from the trees, it's easier for them to take it over the line and hit it over the tree. Right. So I just want to see them play just more traditional golf courses, more workable golf courses, and watch them try and do things like that. And, you know, and again, they're playing across, like, I mean, I know there's a lot right now in the States, but they're playing courses that you don't normally see year in, year out. And that's like one of my biggest things and hopes for this league is to put themselves, again, on golf courses that are, I guess you could say, more traditional and just different from what we've been seeing week in and week out.
For sure. No, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see. I think from your perspective, you're really going to enjoy just the golf course out in Portland. I think just from what I know about Pumpkin Ridge, you're going to really love the setup of that golf course, and it's going to be right up your alley and anyone else's alley who's looking for a different style of golf course setup and architecture from the day in and day out that we get at a lot of these notorious PGA Tour courses. So it'll be fun to watch. I'm excited to tune in. I will tune in this weekend out at London at Centurion Club. Again, guys, if you want to tune in, go to livegolf.com to tune in live. It's that easy, which I think is very interesting. It'll be interesting to see how Facebook handles maybe an influx of folks. For people who are saying, too, they're only going online because no one's going to watch. The Miami, October 27th through 30th, is already sold out. And so is Bangkok, and so is Jeddah. So, I mean, if we're talking about, again, stop being so stubborn as American media that this isn't going to catch on, because the worldwide audience in China and in Saudi Arabia and even in our home country of United States of America down in Miami are sold out venues already. I mean, fans don't lie when they're talking about wanting to see professional golf.
You made this comment just now about how, oh, they only want to broadcast it online because not many people are going to want to see it. Now, you're mentioning about guys and, you know, fans going there physically. I said, going back to the comment about, you know, online, I said, the best golf broadcasting we talk about year in and year out lately is the Masters, and that's the app and the website that they produce. So for someone saying that, oh yeah, online's not the way to go, or they only want to just do online because they're not going to get viewers, that statement is just rubbish, because I'd rather go on the Masters website and rewatch the whole Masters over and over again just because of their broadcasting and what they do on their website and app. And that's, I think, this, hoping LIV follows.
I'll tell you this. If they set their website up for media and watching coverage verbatim or similar to the way the Masters does it, boy, are they going to do some damage. Because like you said, to be able to have the setup and the coverage that the Masters does, because they own their rights, they own everything about the Masters, like I'm imagining LIV Golf does with all their media, because they're going online with it and not signing the devil's deal with NBC or CBS or Fox. They're going to own their coverage. They're going to own the way it gets dispersed. And if you want to dive in a spot deeper, right, anyone who reposts PGA Tour media right now gets basically like shadow banned. They get told to pull down their coverage on Instagram, on Twitter, because PGA Tour owns the rights. I'm going to almost bet, you can write this down, take it to the bank, if LIV Golf is smart, they're going to do what the NBA does. They're going to do what the NFL does and allow as many MFers online to repost all of their golf content on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, as much as humanly possible. They're going to let the fans do the marketing for them. And I think if they're smart, that's the avenue to gain notoriety fast. And again, it all starts with that online coverage. If you're already broadcasting to Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and online on their media platforms, it's that much easier in the 21st century to click, share, boom, done. And that's what the PGA Tour is missing out on right now.
Yep. Been saying it every week.
I'm interested to see it. I think there's a lot more potential for growth than what everyone that is just riding the PGA's coattails right now is willing to admit. And if we're a catch-22, I think they do realize it, but the PGA Tour is so scared that they're going to lose out on some money that they don't want to see this tour possibly succeed.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things I'm kind of taking away from this is, you know, everybody's trying to talk about PGA Tour versus LIV, and the PGA Tour is kind of, you know, backs up against the wall, or however you want to describe it, is it goes back to the concept of change, right? We got a new tournament that's fresh, kind of, you know, ready to kind of jump into it, changing a bunch of things up, yet the PGA Tour is like, nah, this is how we've always done it, and we're unwilling to change, but, you know, we change all the time. And I think that's why a lot of people are so excited to watch LIV, whether you know, take politics out of it, is because it's different and it's new. And they're willing to try new things. Let's see if this works. If it don't work, they're going to go back to the drawing board and figure out something else.
For sure. No, and I think, you know, that's the tough part as media, in which we fall into. So when we bash the media, sometimes we got to take a step back and realize we are media as a podcast and as a YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, right? That's some things that I think people are struggling with right now, is that they can't seem to detach the political jargon that has been so associated with this tour since it started, or even before it started, right? When there was rumblings back in 2019 of this Premier Golf League, or whatever they didn't know it was going to be called at the time, it was backed by Saudi. It's bad. Yet the same people go and cover all the PGA Tour tournaments and all the other tour tournaments that are held in Saudi Arabia and don't bat an eye, right? The competition, I think, is the biggest thing that the PGA Tour has made a massive media press on, in a bad direction for the LIV Tour, is because it competes with the PGA Tour. And they have done a very good job of convincing, I don't know how to verb this without making it sound bad, but convincing people who are so stuck in their ways and hate change that the LIV Golf is bad because of position A, right? But there is no other position. Other than that, it offers a phenomenal opportunity for a worldwide viewership to see more golf and an exciting, possibly exciting, we don't know yet. We haven't seen a team event truly be played out yet. So like Dante Frederico says, until a peg's in the ground, I'm not a believer. But we'll see. That's the thing. We are going to see. And until then, it's an exciting opportunity to have a new format of professional golf being played and has access to the world.
Yeah. And another thing too is look at it as a viewership standpoint. It's more golf to watch. So why are we throwing our arms up in the air like, oh, this is a bad thing? I mean, everybody who is a true, you know, they love golf and they want to, you know, that's the sport they follow and that's the sport they want to watch. You know, you only get 4 days every week, right? If you're looking at just the PGA Tour, not, you know, the LPGA, you know, any college or Korn Ferry or, you know, DP, all them other tours that are out there that you can possibly watch. I mean, if you're just looking at the PGA Tour versus LIV, and that's all you watch, I mean, you now have another tournament to watch. So if PGA goes into, and you're watching on TV, goes into a commercial break that takes freaking 5 minutes, well, guess what? I'm going to put on my laptop and I'm going to watch LIV Golf and I'm not going to miss the beat.
Amen. I'm excited to try it out. That's all I can say. And you know what? If people back
give it a shot,
because we're excited to try it out, then yeah, you know what? Maybe you aren't for us anyway, because we
who
are
knows?
For you. We're open-minded here at Enjoy the Walk podcast.
We can literally watch it over this next week and be like, this tour sucks.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be. It could be not. Who knows? All I'm saying is $75 ground passes for Trump Bedminster in New Jersey. Dante, I'm staying the night, and we might just have to go.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys, as always, you can go to www.enjoythewalkpod.com to check out the latest podcasts and latest merch drops from us. We've got some exciting things around the corner this summer for some merch drops and some fun YouTube videos for some on-site content for you guys for some golf blogs and golf interviews. So go check it out, www.enjoythewalkpod.com, and Enjoy the Walk Golf Podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts as well. So thank you guys for listening. Share the podcast. That's the way we grow. We appreciate you guys listening week in and week out as we continue to build this podcast to be one of the best in the country. We can't do it without you guys. So thank you again. And as always, get out there, carry your clubs, and enjoy the walk.
That's the stuff. One shot at a time.